going forward, at least for now, nonprofit groups that give money to political campaigns have to disclose the names of many of their donors. This week, the U.S. Supreme Court refused to block a lower court's ruling issuing that requirement. That means if you give at least $200 a year to a political nonprofit organization, people can find out about it. Advocates for stricter regulation of money in politics applauded the move, saying we're about to learn a lot more about who's funding elections. Conservatives say the change raises First Amendment concerns about donor privacy. Michelle Yeehy Lee is a reporter on the Washington Post's National Political Enterprise and Accountability team. She covers money and influence in politics. Michelle, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, there's a lot of different kinds of political groups that are involved in campaigns. What type of group does this ruling, or I guess this non-ruling, affect?
This affects politically active nonprofit groups, which are often called dark money groups by their critics. These are nonprofits that participate in some political activity, but that activity only makes up to 50% of what they do. So because it doesn't comprise more than 50%, they don't have to report all of their donors. And now all of that is about to change.
Right. Why did they originally not have to reveal their donors? And what was the case that has turned that around?
So in the past, they didn't have to disclose their donors unless it was a very specific fundraising circumstance, which rarely happened. So basically, unless they asked donors to pay for a specific ad that was going to run at a specific time calling for the election or defeat of a specific federal candidate, they didn't have to disclose their donors. And the donors and solicitations don't get into that specific of a circumstance. So they were able to not report the donors by asking generally for them to support their political activities. But now, the rule that they had been participating under, which had been in place for almost 40 years, is gone. That's what the lower court ruling did. The federal judge threw out that rule, and the Supreme Court decided not to question that for now. So the groups may have to report a lot more donors than they previously had to, and they're now trying to figure out exactly which donors they have to reveal.
Right. Does this apply to somebody who made a donation, I don't know, 2 months ago in this election cycle, to people who make donations between now and November?
So that's actually in question right now. It's not entirely clear. Part of the lawsuit involved disclosing donors who had given to these groups for the past year, for the past calendar year. So there are some people who say that this decision should be applied retroactively, but a lot of people are fighting against that and saying that it should only happen moving forward. So the Federal Election Commission's chairwoman, for what it's worth, has said that she does not think that this should be applied retroactively and that it should only apply moving forward. So we'll see if the guidance from the FEC actually follows where she stands.
Still a lot up in the air. Michelle, thanks for bringing us up to date.
Thank you.
That's Michelle Yeehy Lee, a reporter on the Washington Post National Political Enterprise and Accountability team. She covers money and influence in politics. We've got the basics of the story now. How could this affect the upcoming fall midterms and future elections? Eleanor Neff Powell is an associate professor of political science at UW-Madison. She studies Congress, political parties, and money in politics. Ellie, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, can you talk about how important these kinds of groups we're talking about, as we just heard, are in the overall political landscape?
So these nonprofit groups have been spending a lot over the past election cycles. They've been increasingly using this tool to avoid disclosure. And so groups like Crosswords GPS, the group that's been involved with the current lawsuit, you know, in past years has spent, you know, around $100 million per election cycle. And there are a number of other groups that have also spent a similarly large amounts of money.
Now, we hear a lot about PACs or political action committees. This is not them.
This is not them. This is a group, this is a type of group, these nonprofits that didn't typically have to disclose their donors. PACs do have to disclose their donors. And so this is sort of one of the biggest areas of dark money in campaign finance that's now potentially going to have to disclose.
Right. If I wanted to put a lot of money into politics but didn't necessarily want my name attached to it, this was a type of group, the type of group I would go after?
This was one of the biggest vehicles for that sort of thing. Mm-hmm.
And do we have a sense of the scope of how much money was involved in this? Or because of these reporting and disclosure exemptions, do we not know that?
It's a little difficult to say. I mean, certainly in the order of magnitude in terms of hundreds of millions of dollars, these types of groups, but it's tough to say more precisely than that.
So let's talk about some of the pros and cons here. The group Crew Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, I believe they were part of this lawsuit. They're saying this is great. It provides disclosure. It allows us to follow the money and the influence. Can you talk about that case?
Yeah, so the larger context behind the case is this idea that this wasn't originally the intent of these nonprofits, that essentially the argument is that this is a sort of distortion of campaign finance rules and that there shouldn't be this end run around the system where you can sort of contribute to campaigns without having your name disclosed. There's this idea that there should be sort of sunshine and disclosure, that that's sort of important for voters to know where the money is coming from.
And so this kind of nonprofit might have been, I have a group, we're advocating for an issue, we want to do a little bit of involvement in political campaigns, but we don't exist for that main purpose.
Exactly. So these groups are sort of by law not supposed to do more than 50% of their activities supposed to be political. So theoretically, they're supposed to have some other majority purpose, but it can be sort of up to the 50% they can spend on campaign finance.
Now, does political only mean an ad that says vote for this candidate or vote against that candidate? They wouldn't include an ad that says this issue is important, call such and such a candidate, but doesn't use the words vote for?
You get into a real gray area there about sort of when candidate's being advocated for or against, sort of where it's political and where it's sort of more sort of issue oriented and sort of less political. So there's a bit of gray area here in terms of how we classify that sort of middle section of ads.
In the reaction to this case and in other campaign finance issues, the argument against disclosure is often along the lines of people should be free to participate in politics, donate money, and not risk different forms of retaliation or harassment for having their names attached to the donation. Has that been an argument that's been around for a while?
Yeah, that's sort of one argument against disclosure, is that essentially people should be allowed to exercise their free speech to support candidates or causes that they support from. They should be able to do it free of harassment or free of sort of damage to their business. You know, sometimes you get consumer backlash if you're a company or a company owner that contributes and that your consumers don't like that issue.
And these new guidelines, after this case now, it doesn't apply to all donors. If I donate $50 or $199 to Group X, they don't have to disclose my name. 200 plus in the course of a year, they do.
Exactly. Only if you're giving more than 200 plus in the course of a year. And that's true actually for most campaign contributions, not just for these campaign contributions to nonprofits, but typically contributions less than $200. It's sort of up to the campaign itself whether or not they disclose those names or not. They're sort of considered such small contributions. They're not of concern to sort of the democratic process.
So under the current state of affairs, after the Supreme Court said we're not going to block this order, these nonprofit groups sounds like playing under similar rules to, as you mentioned, political action committees or a candidate's campaign itself, where they disclose donors in a similar way. Is that right?
Yes. Now, it's worth noting that this in some ways might be a temporary state of affairs, that essentially what we have on the court right now with Justice Kennedy's vacancy and with Judge Kavanaugh not yet confirmed, we have a 4-4 court. And so this was just a sort of, they didn't intervene in sort of an emergency order to stop the lower court's ruling, but they could still later take the case. And so if we had a conservative justice on the court who's confirmed at some later date, the court could still take the case, and so they could overturn this ruling. So we're in sort of a little bit of a gray area here because we have this tied situation on the court.
Yeah, looking back at recent major Supreme Court rulings on campaign finance issues, Citizens United, McCutcheon, if, as you say, there were another conservative justice on the court, would you anticipate more moves in that direction, including on a case like this?
Yes, again, any case, anything can happen, but the pattern that we've seen on the court is that there are sort of the four more liberal justices tend to be in favor of disclosure, and the four more conservative justices tend to be sort of opposed to that. So if we add another conservative justice, presumably they would overturn this decision.
On a practical level, if this law sticks, or if this ruling sticks for a while, do you think it'll have an effect on who's donating to what?
It might potentially discourage donors. You know, another potential argument is it might change how voters view these ads if they know who's supporting them. It's potentially, you know, if it turns out that, you know, some of these groups, the money's coming from some very well-known donors or sort of causes that the people that the voters don't like, you know, potentially that could change how they view the ads. Maybe they're less likely to take the information in the ad as seriously if they think that the information might be tainted or biased in some way.
We're talking about the U.S. Supreme Court's refusal to block a lower court's ruling that nonprofit political groups disclose some of their donors over $200 a year. Ellie Neff Powell is with us, associate professor of political science at UW-Madison. What do you think? You can join us at 800-642-1234. Do you think we need to know who's funding election ads, election groups, these nonprofit groups, or for that matter, PACs or candidates? Do you think disclosure is important, or should there be ways that donors can make anonymous donations that enter into political campaigns that call on us to vote for or against a candidate? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you coming up on Central Time. We continue our discussion on the new disclosure rules for nonprofit political groups. Eleanor Neff Powell is an associate professor of political science at UW-Madison. She follows Congress, political parties, and money in politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this non-ruling from the Supreme Court saying, yeah, these nonprofit political groups have to disclose who their donors are, at least donors over a certain amount? Do you think it chills speech if people have to say who they are when they donate, if that information has to be revealed? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. To your calls now, Cindy is with us in Appleton. Cindy, hello.
Hello.
What do you think?
I think this is just a total hypocritical double standard. I mean, you've got people that are going to have to give, you know, if they give $200, they're going to have to disclose, and then you've got people that are giving $2 million dark money and they don't have to disclose. That just is not right.
So you're happy to see the disclosure requirement, it sounds like?
Well, if it's fair, but if you're going to make people that are giving $200 disclose and people that are giving $2 million don't have to, that's not fair.
Gotcha. Cindy, thanks for the call. $200 and up in donations to these groups. So if you donate $200 or $2 million, they disclose the name and the amount? Is that?
Yes, the name and the amount. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so both. So any amount over $200, both the really high-dollar donors and the sort of mid-level donors, the $200 donors, are all going to have to disclose under these rules.
A question I imagine we don't know the answer to with these political nonprofits is the amounts of donations they get, since until now they haven't had to disclose. We don't know how many of their donations are small or large.
Yes, there's a lot of ambiguity and uncertainty to sort of understand exactly what's been happening here. So one of the things, as sort of people who study money in politics, we want to know these questions to be able to understand what's been happening in the last few election cycles and what's happening going forward.
Thanks for that call. We'll go next to Jay on the line in Madison. Jay, hi.
Hey, hi. Thanks for covering the subject. It's an important one. I do think that most Wisconsinites favor disclosure of the donors. After all, these people are trying to influence the outcome of an election, and you know, I think they have complete information. People need to know who's behind these nasty ads that run on television and radio, not national public radio, of course, but others. And so disclosure, I think, is in everyone's interest, and even the United States Supreme Court, even those who favored Citizens United, said that disclosure is almost essential. The question I have is that my understanding of this ruling is that it only applies to federal elections. So in other words, the very nasty gubernatorial race that's occurring right now in Wisconsin between Tony Evers and Scott Walker features a lot of these nasty ads run by outside special interest groups. Disclosure, my understanding is, would not be these outside groups running in the state elections would not be required to disclose. And then the second thing, and then I'll get off the air, is that wouldn't it be possible for the groups that now are running these campaign ads and don't disclose, and these are ads that basically do say, Rob, as you mentioned, vote for, vote against, but had not been disclosed, all they'd have to do is start running the phony issue ads, the sham issue ads.
Gotcha, Jay. You gave us a lot there. I want to get into both of those issues. This ruling applies to candidates for federal office, like Congress, Senate, President, not, as he said, for, say, a governor.
Exactly. The caller brought up a great point that the rules for federal elections are completely different than the rules for state elections. So this ruling only applies to these federal elections.
And then his second point was that, okay, we'll stop running ads that say vote for, vote against. We'll run an issue ad that says candidate X opposes this. Call candidate X and tell them they shouldn't oppose it. Never use the word vote. Does that give them wiggle room?
there's amazing creativity on the part of campaign donors. So one of the things that patterns that we've seen over the number of years is as soon as there's some rule that limits donor behavior is people will find a way around the system and that there's innovation to sort of skirt these rules. And so I don't know if the suggestion the caller supplied would exactly work, but there's a lot of potential for creativity to sort of try to further skirt these rules.
Jay, thanks for that call. We'll go next to Steve with us in Sun Prairie. Steve, hello.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. One of the biggest contributions that is out there is an in-kind contribution that is made by the liberal media. So you look at CNN, which is, you know, if not 100% liberal, probably 98% liberal. Something should be done about that if you're going to tell other people that they can't have the same bully pulpit without risking their own livelihood. So I would prefer people be able to do what they want with their own money and get government out of it.
But you, what do you think of the disclosure idea in particular, Steve?
Like I said, I don't think people should care what private people do with their own money. Get government out of it.
All right, Steve, thanks for the call. Steve, it sounds like doesn't favor disclosure, and that's an argument that, the government shouldn't have anything to do with regulating that.
Yeah, he's certainly not alone in that. There are lots of folks who are sort of opposed to disclosure and think that they should be able to sort of advocate for causes they believe in and not have to pay any sort of potential political or commercial backlash for the popularity or unpopularity of those opinions.
Steve, thanks for the call. Nate joins us next in Milwaukee. Nate, hi.
Hi, thank you for having me. And I would suspect Steve is probably part of a vocal minority. Something that we actually had here in Wisconsin that was revealed by the John Doe 2 investigation into Scott Walker's recall campaign is that large amounts of money from small numbers of people were going to basically help out a political campaign, and it was there were sort of favors done after the election. And this is something that the voters had no idea of because it was hidden behind the third-party groups. And in theory, the politicians weren't supposed to know, so they couldn't give favors. But it was revealed that they absolutely did. So this is something that gets rid of one portion of bribery or one avenue of bribery. And it's also, in my mind, very hypocritical that you've got laws being put up against people protesting who are actual human beings by these same conservatives who run around and say, oh, you can't restrict money, which is, I think, an invitation to corruption ongoing.
Nate, thanks a lot for the call. And Nate's summing up one of the big arguments on disclosure is that if you don't know who's paying money to whom, you can't watch for potential influence on politicians.
Yes, he makes a great point. I mean, one of the biggest arguments in favor of sort of campaign finance rules more broadly and disclosure rules in particular is this idea of Justice Brandeis, that sunshine is the best disinfectant, that we need to sort of be able to see and understand what's happening so that we can understand that corruption or there's some sort of appearance of corruption in the process.
Thanks for that call, Nate. We're talking to Ellie Neff Powell from UW-Madison, looking at this U.S. Supreme Court decision not to block a court decision on disclosure of donations to this particular type of nonprofit political action group. So as you say, this isn't done yet. Who is the decider on what rules these groups are following now?
Well, there's a lot of ambiguity right now. And one of the biggest reasons for ambiguity is the Federal Election Commission has a bunch of vacant seats. So essentially, the Federal Election Commissioner is going to be the ones that are going to sort of provide the details about how this is going to be enforced and sort of what the process is going to be. But the sort of rules behind the Federal Election Commission, there are 6 seats, and you have to have 4 folks on the board in order to make any decision. Well, there are 2 empty seats right now, so it requires unanimity of the board to do anything. And right now, we've got gridlock. The Democrats and the Republicans on the Federal Election Commission can't agree on anything, and they can't get unanimity, so nothing is happening. So essentially, the Federal Election Commission just isn't doing anything in terms of rulings. And in this case, failure to sort of rewrite these rules meant that the disclosure was the sort of net result.
Does this lower court ruling spell out how this should work in the meantime, pending an FEC ruling?
It leaves a lot of ambiguity that the FEC is going to have to interpret, and we just don't know at this point how the FEC is going to handle this.
So lawyers at these nonprofit groups are going to be having some long sleepless nights here.
There are going to be a lot of lawyers doing a lot of research into exactly what this means and how this is going to change their behavior going forward.
And so it seems like one thing that might happen is a group decides to test this rule, not disclose something, wait for a court case and hope that it makes its way up the chain to the U.S. Supreme Court to get more clarification.
Yes. Or sort of refuse to disclose, get taken to court, but that inevitable court case is going to happen long after the election. And so, again, they can sort of drag out the system for the purposes of anonymity throughout this election cycle.
A lot to watch for there. Ellie, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Eleanor Neff Powell is an associate professor of political science at UW-Madison. We talked to her about the potential fallout from this U.S. Supreme Court decision to not block a lower court's ruling regarding so-called dark money. It requires nonprofit groups that place political ads to disclose donors' names, donors over $200. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, we'll round up some of the top stories in Wisconsin news, including latest details now on the shooting yesterday in Middleton. In the midst of a Supreme Court nomination process, people are floating the idea of ending lifetime appointments to the nation's highest court, having some kind of term limit, one term of X number of years, 14, 18, different numbers are bouncing around. We'll hear the case to end lifetime appointments to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the blogger at The Smitten Kitchen gives us some great advice on slow roasting some of our favorite fall veggies. Yum, delicious vegetables on this week's edition of Food Friday. A sneak preview, I saw this, a surprising way to make sweet potatoes in the oven. I make sweet potatoes in the oven. We got a different way, a different recipe coming up. I'm a big fan of oven roasting vegetables. You will be too, I think, after you listen to Food Friday. That and more, it's all coming up tomorrow right here on Central Time.